You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Climate change has become one of the defining issues of our age. In spite of vigorous disinformation campaigns by business and associated lobbies, there's ample conclusive proof that the Earth is warming. Canada has effectively turned its back on its responsibilities to reduce CO2 emissions and continues to trump the expansion of the tar sands. Canada's polar regions are at the front line where the impacts of global warming are felt most acutely. Cheryl Harper is a graduate scholar in Aboriginal People's Health at the University of Guelph. She recently co-authored a study that explores links among weather patterns, water quality, and gastrointestinal illness in two communities in Nunatsiavut, a region of northern Labrador. To discuss her findings, Cheryl joins us on the phone from Guelph. Good morning, Cheryl, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. What were some of the primary findings of your report?
Well, as you said, we were studying the links between weather patterns, water quality, and waterborne disease, or diarrhea and vomiting, in Nunatsiavut. And generally, when researchers study this, they examine how weather events impact health outcomes, and then they discuss it in the context of climate change, which is what we did. And Indigenous people are particularly sensitive to these types of climate change impacts because of their geographical locations, but also because of their close relationships with their surrounding environment, as well as underlying social inequities and inequalities. And in Nunatsiavut, while most Inuit there have access to treated tap water in their homes, many still prefer to go out on the land and bring their water home and drink brook water that hasn't been treated. And also, when people are out hunting on the land, they don't have access to tap water, so they drink brook water that hasn't been treated. So our study investigated how weather patterns were impacting drinking water quality and waterborne disease. And we found that after periods of heavy rainfall or rapid snowmelt, there was more E. coli and total coliforms in the brook water. And this could be due to a number of different reasons. For instance, you know, runoff. So after a period of heavy rainfall, things can get washed into that brook water. Or an increase in turbidity. So after a period of heavy rainfall, it might stir up the brook water and make it more cloudy or turbid, and that can protect pathogens against water treatment like chlorination. So then our next question was, okay, but, you know, are people getting sick just because there's more E. coli and total coliforms in the water? People might not necessarily be getting ill. But we did find that after these periods of heavy rainfall and rapid snowmelt, 2 to 4 weeks later, there was a significant increase in clinic visits for diarrhea and vomiting.
Those were some of your findings. Why did you undertake this report in the first place?
Well, there are a number of different reasons that we undertook this this study. The first was that the health impacts of climate change, many researchers and scholars think that the health impacts of climate change will be the biggest threat to public health in the 21st century. So we were generally interested in this topic. But also, the World Health Organization is estimating or predicting that the biggest burden of future climate-related health will be due to diarrheal disease. The second reason that we undertook this research is because our partners in Nunatsiavut were interested in learning more about this question. So they invited us to Nunatsiavut to partner with them in this research.
Nunatsiavut is in northern Labrador and, as you've indicated, has a large First Nations community. What did you learn from the elders as you pursued your research?
Well, when I spoke to many community members, including elders, they had a lot of different stories about how their land has been changing as a result of climate change. A story that I hear quite often while I'm up there is the changes in ice quality and quantity and the ice extent. Inuit are incredibly dependent on ice. When they go out hunting, which is how they provide food for their family, they rely on ice for travel. So if the ice is not as thick or if it's not as high of quality, then they're at increased danger when they're out there. So I heard a lot of different stories about how the changes in ice thickness and quality were impacting hunters' ability to provide for their family.
What about the, you've mentioned the hunting, what about the wildlife? Did they indicate any changes in that aspect?
Yes, lots of different hunters noted changes in wildlife migration, also new species of wildlife coming up, also a decrease in abundance, you know, traditional hunting grounds where people have gone for generations to hunt, there's no longer caribou there, as well as, you know, accessing those animals is increasingly difficult as well.
And aside from those two aspects which we've been discussing, the water and the wildlife, what other impacts is climate change having on these communities?
Well, I think that if you think of the geography of the region and how climate change is already impacting their lifestyles. Oftentimes in climate research, we talk about this 2-degree or 4-degree kind of threshold, that if, you know, temperature increases by that amount, we're going to be seeing serious impacts on, you know, people's lives. But in many Arctic communities, people are already experiencing those types of impacts, those increases in temperature. So, you know, it impacts hunting. People were reporting changes in the quality and quantity of brook water, changes in wildlife patterns. And this ultimately impacts the culture, the Inuit culture. They have an incredibly strong relationship with the local land and their local environment. And, you know, I think that the impacts that climate change has on the local environment impacts them.
What about things like infrastructure? Are we seeing any changes there?
Yeah, absolutely. When you go there, you can see for yourself firsthand the impact that climate change seems to be having, or what I would presume to be climate change is having on their environment. So there's definitely impacts on infrastructure. With the permafrost melting, you see shifts in Aramac tarmacs. You know, they're not level anymore. They've broken. Because the permafrost is shifting, some of the buildings shift and the windows don't fit the windowsills properly anymore, so there's lots of cracked windows, lots of things like that. Or if you, you know, I've had hunters take me out on a path that's usually good to travel over snow until, you know, June, and I went out there late March last year and there was absolutely no snow, it was moss, so we were skidooing over top of moss instead of snow, and unfortunately, these types of observations are not uncommon in the north.
Skidooing over moss, that sounds like quite an adventure.
Yes, I think so.
You mentioned the hunting. I'm just and the change in the game, the wildlife and the game. I'm wondering, are hunters having trouble finding game? What has this done for the food supply and so forth?
Well, I don't study food security directly, but I can tell you anecdotally that it does impact their ability to provide wild foods for their family. Communities do have access to grocery stores. They're called northern stores, and they do have food there. But the food's incredibly expensive, and, of course, people prefer to eat their wild food. People prefer to eat, you know, caribou and ducks and berries and things like that over processed frozen store food.
Now, returning for a moment to the illnesses, like the gastrointestinal illnesses that you mentioned earlier, can public health authorities do anything to combat these type of illnesses in these northern communities?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that that's kind of the exciting part of our findings is that there is something that we can do, and I think that Canada has a real opportunity to take a leadership role by doing this type of research in the Arctic. And this type of research can inform adaptation policies and programs that are innovative and evidence-based to prevent these types of impacts of climate change on waterborne disease in the north, but then also to take these Canadian developed adaptation strategies and policies and adapt them to other areas in Canada and other areas around the world. So I think that Canada has a real opportunity here to work closely with Inuit and to learn from their experiences and to learn from them so that we can prevent future impacts of climate change on waterborne disease.
And do you have any plans to continue to study the health impacts of global warming in Aboriginal northern communities?
Yes, there's a lot of interest in a number of different communities in the north in doing this type of research. And there's a project that's just been started up called the Indigenous Health Adaptation to Climate Change Project. And it's a 5-year project that looks at how climate change impacts health in Indigenous communities in the Arctic, in Peru, and in Uganda. And the three areas of focus that were identified by the communities that we're working with was how climate change impacts food security, how climate change impacts waterborne disease, which is the area that I'm looking at, and thirdly, how climate change impacts vector-borne disease like malaria.
Well, thank you, Cheryl Lee, so much for joining us today, and thank you also for your excellent research into this important area.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been speaking with Cheryl Lee Harper, a PhD candidate at the University of Guelph. You can learn more about her study at ihacc.ca.